The first aliyah of Parshas Kisavo can give you a very different impression than the rest of the, or a lot of the rest of the Parsha. Parshas Kisavo, unfortunately, is a very intense Parsha in a very unpleasant way, a lot of it. The Tochacha, very hard to think about and listen to. And there are all kinds of approaches to how it should be presented. But if you read the first aliyah, it's a completely different tone. And the first aliyah has maybe even a integrated theme throughout, which is a very positive tone. Literally a happy, cheerful tone. And we'll talk about how that's a theme throughout. So it really lulls you into a sense of security, or I don't know, lulls you into a very different kind of mindset before it takes a sharp turn. So we're lucky for us that we only do Rishon this year. So as far as we know, very cheerful, happy Parsha. That's all we know. So anybody who's only listening on Mondays and Thursdays or only listening to our Parsha Shir today, all they know is that Kisavo is very cheerful. So the Parsha begins telling us about the mitzvah of Bikurim. But first it says, V'hoya Kisavo el haaretz, Asher Hashem lokecha nosen lecha nachala v'rishta v'yashavta ba. So you will come into the land that God gives you, and you will acquire it, you will inherit it, and you will settle it. And the Sefrei says here that, just to convey to you, that you should not be kafui tov, that you should be grateful. And this is really a theme of the Aliyah overall. And many understood, the Chovas HaLevavos and others, that this is one of the fundamental ikarim, to use that word, of Torah. That all of Torah is premised on the belief of Akar Satov, of proper recognition of that which we have benefited from. And many Rishonim took the stance that this is an absolutely crucial, vital component of what it means to be a Jew. And arguably, you can't get anywhere without it. And many understand that that's why Kibbud Av V'Em is such a fundamental mitzvah, and among the Asaras HaDibros, because it's meant to instill Hakaras HaTov, and that Hakaras HaTov to Ribono Shalom can only really be acquired if we have Hakaras HaTov to human beings, and we have a general mentality of Hakaras HaTov. And that's essentially what we mean when we talk about the concept that we say you should write a thank you letter, that somebody gives you a gift, you should say thank you, you should express gratitude. So that's very important. But that's actually not the whole definition of Hakaras HaTov. It's important as proper midos and politeness and derech eretz. But Hakaras HaTov exists separate from that. And we find that Hakaras HaTov is expressed even to inanimate objects. We're familiar perhaps with the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu was not the one to hit the Nile River for Makas Dam, because he benefited from the river, he was saved from it, through it, so therefore he didn't want to be violent against it. And the Gemara Maseches Bava Kama, Daf Tzadi Beis, talks about if somebody should drink from a well, so he shouldn't throw rocks into the well. So it's an inanimate object. So the idea that you should show gratitude, you should feel gratitude to an inanimate object, is a fascinating one. The Meiri, commenting over there, takes it further. I think other Rishonim say that you shouldn't even think badly about this river, this well. So that's two steps removed from expressing thanks to a human being. Here we're talking about an inanimate object, and we're talking about something that's not even being overtly expressed at all.
That's a Gemara.
That's the Rishonim commenting on that Gemara.
Where's that Gemara?
Above a comment, study base and base. So what you see is that Hakaras HaTov is not just the expression of polite thank yous, but it is literally translated hakara of tov. It is the acknowledgement that your life is better because of X, Y, and Z. And that is crucial, because without that, so everything is meaningless. Again, this is a big yisod of Kippur Av'Eim that comes up again and again. It's a big yisod of Hanukkah. It's a big yisod of a lot of things. And maybe it's yisod of Kol HaTorah Kulo. Rav Huttner has an essay where he discusses the comment of the Ramban that when the Torah was given, so we had a whole thunder and lightning show we find in Parshas Yisrael, and the Torah tells us that the Jews are told, don't be scared by the whole display here, that it's there, Laman Nasoscha. So what does that mean, Laman Nasoscha? So some interpret it mean to lift you up, like a banner, and some understand like a Nisoyan. This is a Nisoyan. So how is it a Nisoyan? So the idea is that if the Torah is going to be given to the Jewish people, we need to ascertain that they are able to appreciate what that means, that they are able to have a sense of hakara. Because if somebody is very jaded and very cynical and doesn't think that anything is valuable, so then the most valuable item in the world is not going to be meaningful. So the Torah inherently is clearly infinitely valuable, but still it's not going to matter to somebody who has no capacity to appreciate that which is great. So we have to see, when you experience this kind of thunder and light show, is your reaction, been there, done that, whatever, I have a better app on my phone, or is it that you were able to recognize that this is something spectacular? Because if not, then the Torah is not going to make an impact either. Now, there's a lot to say about that. Maybe we'll talk about that at other points of the year. But this notion of hakara satov, literally, to recognize the good, is a very crucial value. It comes up in a lot of places. And therefore, it makes sense that it's true even when dealing with non-human beings, with inanimate objects, and even when not actually communicating. So it's two steps removed. And also, it's true even for human beings who are not intentionally benefiting you. So, for example, we're supposed to have some kind of hakara satov to the mitzvah for hosting us, even though they were enslaving us also. But the hospitality deserves credit. You know, there is a notion of hakara satov that is not tied in to the idea that somebody is intentionally looking to benefit you and you are expressing your thanks to them. That is not always going to be the case when we talk about hakara satov. Hakara satov exists at an even more fundamental level. So the mitzvah of bikurim is meant to express that. And we find that bikurim applies to even a very small amount, even to a mashu, at least a minat Torah. In the Rabbanan, we recommend that it should be more than that, should be about 1/60, but it applies to even a very small amount. And like Simchas Lebrody talks about in the Sefer Sonderach, that it's about seeing a progression. Okay, you see this very small little thing as reflecting your gratitude, and then you build from there to that which is bigger. So the Torah contains here this phrase, Virashta Vyashavtava, that you shall acquire the land, you shall settle the land. So here Rashi tells us, as we know, this is a din in the mitzvah tli of aretz. Rashi says, "Magid shlonis chayv bikurim ad shekovshu es aretz v'chalkua." They're not going to be chayv and bikurim until they take over the land and they divide it up. So the problem is, this seems to contradict a sifrei. This is undeniable. It's a mitzvah tli of aretz, but the sifrei has a comment which is hard to understand in light of this. Says that the whole zchus, and so we should do this mitzvah, kidei shetikanes laretz, that the zchus of this mitzvah is what will bring us into the land. So everyone has a hard time with this, because how could you get into the land on the merit of this mitzvah? You haven't done the mitzvah yet. The mitzvah only applies in the land. There are other mitzvos that they could fulfill in the Midbar. It's a part of what we talked about at the beginning of the year here. But not mitzvos on Tlulius Baretz. So how can we say, okay, do this mitzvah, today Shetikon Yisrael, you should be able to go in. So there are various explanations. Rav Schwab understands that here the reference is not just Eretz Yisrael, it's actually Aretz here is a reference to the Mikdash. So it means that even in Eretz Yisrael, you should do this in order to have access to the Mikdash. And he explains other references here also in that sense that we're really talking about the Mikdash. The Stipler maintained, and this is very much synergistic with what we've seen in our regular Shiurim and what we've seen highlighted in the Parsha Shiurim as well, that what we mean is that the mentality going into Eretz Yisrael should be not that I'm looking forward to eating the fruits of the land, but that I'm looking forward to using that for kadosh purposes. I'm looking forward to bringing the fruit as bikurim. So that's very much in line with what we talked about the mentality of Shechita as we enter into the land. A lot of synergy reflected in that particular notion.
Whose answer
was that? The Stipler understood it like this. The Sefer that they published a year or two ago of comments of the Stipler and Rashach on the Torah. So a lot of them are from the existing Svarim that we have with the Stipler and others that just arranged on the Chumash, but some of them are from other sources. So that Sefer HaTorah quotes the Stipler as saying that. But presumably, what this really means is that the mentality of Hakar Satov, that Bikurim is meant to reflect, is what allows us to enter into the land. So perhaps it doesn't actually mean that you're doing this specific mitzvah, but it means that which this mitzvah embodies is the schus that gets you in. And that's where it actually could understand a comment of Chazal in the next aliyah that we won't get to today. But we're talking about Meiser, so the line, Lo avarti mitzvosach avlo shachachti. I haven't forgotten anything, Chazal of a line, I didn't forget to make a bracha. And the Meforshim all asked that bracha Sidra Rabbanan is a pasuk in Chumash. How can we interpret the pasuk in Chumash as talking about the chiyuv of a bracha? And presumably you can explain them in the same way, that it doesn't mean this actual specific act, but it means the mentality that is reflected in this mitzvah that is crucial in order for you to be able to appreciate, you should be able to have what this is going to mean for us. So we see the Aretz literally would presumably mean Eretz Yisrael. Here Schwab is saying it's actually a reference to the Mikdash. The Or HaChaim suggests it's talking about Aretz HaElyona, it's talking about Olam Haba. So the only real Simcha is there. The Rishon HaRebbe is quoted in the Paris Yosef saying that that may be, but still the Ikar Simcha that we talk about is accomplishing things in this world. So you wanted to say differently than the Or HaChaim, or emphasize differently than the Or HaChaim. The whole idea of Bikurim that we're going to read about, and we'll say a few things about. But many understand that it's about taking the Reishis, as the next pasuk begins, V'lakachta me Reishis priha adama, that you should take that which is first and use that as the opportunity to be grateful. So it's like you sometimes see, I think Rabbi Rapp has drawn this comparison, if you see a store, they have the first dollar they ever earned. They have it up on the wall. They use that as an inspiration. They use that as a motivation. So sometimes somebody will take the first thing that they earn and they dedicate that. That has a special quality to it. The first fruits. Some explain that the Rei Chazal that Rashi quotes, that when Yaakov was reunited with Yosef, that he wasn't able to embrace him because he was saying Kriya Shema at the time, and everyone asks, so what bad luck, he finally gets reunited with his long-lost son, it just happens to be his mom Kriya Shema at the time. Different explanations as to what was going on, but some suggest that that tremendous emotional moment of such high significance, Davka wanted to take that moment and dedicate it to the Ribbono Shalom. So we have this kind of idea in the context of Bikurim, and that's one of the themes. There are other themes as well. And it's interesting, so it says V'lakachta here, V'lakachta Mereishis Priha Adama, so you should take, and then the pasuk continues, V'halachta El HaMakom. So there's really a machlokas Rishonim on both of those, what the word means. that lakachta, where do you take from? So some Rishonim say it means that you take from the field to your house, and some Rishonim understand it means you're taking from your house to Yerushalayim. So it's machlokus on both the starting point and the ending point. What is the lakachta, and where is it going? Where the lakachta and the halachta. So the halachta is clearly to the Yerushalayim, but the question, what's the starting and the end point of the lakachta? The Meshech Chachma writes that these two machlokas are intertwined. Each one is about one point of the journey. There's a sefer called Bechia and Chumash, where he suggests that maybe these two possible roots are tied into other possible reasons for the mitzvah Bikurim. Then he quotes from the Bar Benel that he gives many different reasons for Bikurim. So one reason he gives is to be machnia the Yetzer. Here you have your first fruits, so you're very eager to eat, very eager to take it. And instead we say, no, this one you have to set aside. So that requires a lot of discipline, a lot of kvishas Yetzer. And he also discusses an idea there that specifically when you're at a successful point, when you're at a time of menucha, you should reflect and remember everything that was necessary to get there. So he says these two opinions about what the pasuk is talking about reflect those two possibilities, that if we're saying you should be kovei shiyetzer, or you shouldn't benefit for yourself from the first fruit, but you should set it aside for the ribono shel olam. So then the ikar of that is when you're in the field and you choose not to take it for yourself but to set it aside instead and then bring it home. But if the idea is that you should pause during your moment of success and think about the whole process, so that's when you're in the house getting ready to take it all to your shalim. That's in that context. Okay. So, v'lakachta meireishis. What does that mean, meireishis? So, Chazal have a comment here, the Gemara Maseches Menachos and Daf Peidalet and Midbeis. So, there the Gemara says, meireishis v'lo kolreishis. So what does that mean? What halacha is derived from that kind of a limud? So the Gemara says it means that Bikurim only applies to the Zayin Minim that are used to praise Eretz Yisrael. And other foods are not included in the mitzvah of Bikurim. There's a Rashi in Sefer Nechemiah that sounds like for other foods it's a Derabanan. But it's difficult. Kiva Eger and Mishnayos, he asks where he gets that from. And the Gemara says that if you try other fruits, then it doesn't become Kodesh. But it sounds like it's really only the Zayin Minim. And that's apparently derived from Meireishis. So it's always worth calling attention to how Chazal see their interpretations of the Psukim, how the Pasuk transmit the message, to have an appreciation for the relationship between Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaalpeh. It's one of the major goals of our Chumash discussions. So I've mentioned that it's always kedai if you want to prepare for these Chumash Yerim to look at the Torah Tamima and things like that, that call attention to these relationships. So the Torah Tamima here on this pasuk, he says that really the kind of drasha you see, mei reishis v'lo kol reishis, would normally mean that, you normally think it would mean that you can make some of your fruits into Bikurim, but you can't designate all of them. It's a subject to discretion as to how much, but it can't be all of them. Says, but we can't say that because there's another din that we know that actually one could make all of his fruits be Bikurim. So apparently Meireishis does not here mean only some of them. So instead you have to say it means only the Zayin Minim. So I was reading that, I was thinking, well, why couldn't it also mean that Meireishis means literally the best of the best? That Reishis means the best, and Meireishis means even from within that, the best of the best. So the first fruits of the most significant fruits, the ones that are used to praise Eretz Yisrael. So then I saw Baruch Shekivanti, that my grandfather in his commentary to the Torah Tamima, he also questions this interpretation of the Drasha, and he quotes the Ksav HaKabbalah that says along those lines that you should interpret Meireishis in this pasuk as the best of the best. That's what it was essentially saying. So, okay, so it's only for the Zayin Minim. And Again, it's not subject to any shear, but the Chazal say it should be 1/60th, but you could also make your whole field bikurim if you chose to. So you then take the fruits, and you can't just hold them. You have to put them in a basket. The pasuk says, v'samta v'atena, that you have to have a holder for it. Presumably that's because of the kavod for the mitzvah. It should be in a dignified b'chavadik way. So the Rabbaz in his commentary to the Rambam, and Hilchos Bikurim, the Rabbaz writes that this is a din d'oraisa, so it's ma'akev. If you don't have it in a basket, then it's no good. And the Aruch HaShulchan disagreed. It clearly is a din, but whether it's ma'akev or not, that was subject to machlokes. Okay, so you put this in the basket, and then next pasuk says, "Uvas el ha-kohen asher yeh b'yamim ahem." You should go to the kohen that will be in those times. So this is a phrase that we see a few times in the Torah, and we know the question always comes up: oh, you should go to the kohen of that time. You should go to the leader of that time. What was the alternative? You'll go to a time machine. You'll pick a different era to go to, and go to the kohen of that time, or go to the rabbinic authority of that time. So I think we mentioned this in the context of Parshas Shoftim. And there we have an understanding that Yiftach Bedaro Kishmo Bedaro, that it means that you shouldn't think, okay, the authority is not binding in my era because it's not as good as in other generations. No, whatever is then is what is binding. But here in the case of the Kohen, it's got a little bit of a different kind of relevance. And the Gemara in Maseches Kedushin and Daf Samach Vav Mibbeis has a very interesting din, which is subject to a big machlokes among the Rishonim. And we won't get into all the details about it now. If you want, I can tell you where to look. But the Gemara says, the Gemara in Kedushin over there has a few possible sources, but this is one of them, that a Kohen Sha'avad V'nimsa Cholo. Let's say you have a Kohen who's working in the Beis HaMikdash, and we discover that he's actually not a qualified Kohen because of issues of his birth. Maybe he's a son of a Grusha or something, so he is actually not a Kohen, he's a Cholo. So what's the story? So, okay, so this person doing the Avodah was a non-Kohen. So the Gemara says his Avodah is still kosher anyway. And the Gemara has a couple of psukim, Baruch Hashem Chelo from Mezuzah Sabrach, is another one of them. So here, this is also quoted as a source for that, that the Kohen who turns out to be a Chol is still considered to be having done effective Avodah. And sounds like it, because Asher Yev Yab Mahim, meaning that maybe he was a Kohen yesterday, even though now, tomorrow, he's not a Kohen. Now, it's a pretty striking din, because one would say, well, it's not just that, but that he was revealed to have never been a Kohen. So, why is it even true that he's a former Kohen? He was really like a non-Kohen. So, nonetheless, this seems to be the din, that there is a Hechsher to Zavoda, and it's a big discussion, even maybe after the fact, or before the fact, only when you know, or you don't know, so there's a lot of views in there you've shown him. And then there's a discussion in later sources, a little bit outside of our time scope right now, but does this only apply to the Avodah of the Beis HaMikdash? What about a Pidgin HaBen? Let's say you have a Pidgin HaBen that was done by a Kohen, and then you find out when you're 33 years old that the Kohen was a Chol, wasn't really a Kasher Kohen. So there's a discussion in the Poskim, the Ariyot, the Chavis Yair, and others, whether that Pidgin HaBen was effective or not. It's often said in the name of the Vilna Gaon, about the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon was a Bukhar, and that every Kohen he would meet, he would ask him to redeem him, to be poed to him, because he wasn't sure if his original Pidgin HaBen was done by a qualified Kohen. But that's really talking about more than this. He was saying that he doesn't know who was really a Kohen Miuchas nowadays. We don't really know whose lineage actually goes back to genuine kahuna. So it's a whole discussion, what's the mechanism by which we rely on our chazakas, that the people who we believe are kohanim, and the ones we think are not, how do we really know, and how do we know that enough for real dinim is a whole discussion. So the Vilna Gaon was concerned that who knows who actually is a kohen, and every kohen should be poed to him just in case. But here, we're saying something more focused than that, that if, let's say, he was known as a Kohen, but then it turned out afterwards that they discovered he was a Chol, so does this din apply to Pidgin HaBen? Does it apply to Brachas Kohenim? So there's a lot to say about that, but that was one of the things that emerges from this pasuk. And so you come to this Kohen, you say, Hey, Gadati Hayom, Lashem Alekecha, Kivasi El Haaretz, Asher Nishba, Hashem Labusein, Elos Islano. It sounds like you're saying, I just arrived today. Before I should try to figure that out, why are you saying you just arrived today? Rav Schwab brought this as a riot to his point that we mentioned a few minutes ago, that we're really talking about Yerushalayim, we're really talking about the Mikdash when we say this. So we're talking about the Mikdash, and it could make sense from to say, okay, I just arrived today, I just showed up today. But others understand it differently, that, and this is a point that we'll make more about very soon, but we know that there is a usage of this aliyah in the Haggadah Shel Pesach, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But one of the themes of the Haggadah is to be living in the moment of the past, to feel like everything happened today, and that's a part of what you're doing when you come and bring the Bikurim and you're expressing your gratitude for everything. You're basically saying, I arrived in Eretz Yisrael today. My life started today. Everything you're experiencing, the history, as if you're in the moment. That's the very part of the whole mentality of what's going on here. Before going on to the next psukim, just to say a few more dinim about Bikurim, while we're holding here in Bikurim. So there's a couple of dinim in Bikurim that even though we don't have them nowadays, we don't have them in Chutz La'aretz, but there are a number of halachos that come up in the context of Bikurim that have maybe tangential or incidental impact on other things that we do. So, for example, the Mishnah says in Bikurim that when they came bringing the Bikurim to Yerushalayim, so people used to stand up for them. So it sounds like, as the Gemara Maseches Kiddushin discusses this Mishnah, Daf Lamed Gimel, it sounds like there is a din to stand up for a mitzvah. Although we'll see there's a little bit to figure out about that. So that may be brought in another context as well. If you go to a wedding, so you'll see when the chasen comes down, so people stand up, and some people stand up for the kala also. So it's a question, why do you stand for either of them? And then many people stand up for the chasen and the kala, and they don't stand up for the grandparents. So that's a problem, because that's probably a din min haTorah to stand up for the grandparents. They say the takum, that's a more clearly established din. But chasen and kala, so why do you stand up for them? So some assume it's a din in melech, maybe chasen domel melech, so you stand up. Is the kala in the same category or not? Some great gedolim, when their daughters got married, so at the pot of the suffix, they would send the gadol hador walking down with the kala just to make sure the standing was justified.
But,
sorry?
For sure,
that. Yeah, well, it's a chumra. So, in any event, you can figure out how it worked. But in any event, so the question is, why are they standing? So some suggest, I think Rebecca Kamenetsky made this suggestion, others made a suggestion, maybe it's based on this Mishnah in Bikurim, that they would stand up for the Osei Mitzvah. So the chassan is performing a mitzvah kedushin. It's mostly Rishon and the Rambam say Rechinuch understood this a mitzvah. Others thought it was a hechsher mitzvah. If you assume the chassan is doing a mitzvah, so they stand up for him. So it gets into the whole discussion. Is there a mitzvah for the kala also? So she stood up for her the same way. So there's a lot of back and forth about that. But there is a long essay about this whole concept in the Sefer Ol Yaakov in Parshas Kisavo, where he points out, you see this from the way the Gemara treats it, that the idea of standing up for a mitzvah could be based on a couple of things. It could be based on kavod for the mitzvah. It could be based on, the Gemara brings in the principle of chaviva mitzvah b'shaita, and somehow that deserves special attention. The Gemara says maybe more so than a Talmud Chacham. It's a big discussion in the Gemara, but it just gives us a greater appreciation for how honest we have to be in our labor. The Gemara talks about if a person is working on the clock, is being paid for work, is he allowed to stand up for a Talmud Chacham? Is he allowed to stand up for a guy bringing the Bikurim? You see the level of commitment you're expected to put into using your time effectively when you're on the clock. You're even allowed, forgetting the Gemara elsewhere, talks about davening, but to even stand up while you're in the middle of working, maybe that's too much of a distraction. So in any event, what emerges from that Gemara is a couple of possible angles. Maybe it's about the mitzvah, maybe it's about the kavod, maybe it's about chaviv mitzvah v'shaita, or the Gemara also suggests that it was basically a chizuk, that we were afraid that people would make all this schlep to Yerushalayim and then feel like nobody cares, then feel like they're ignored. So if we stand up for them, they give them a big reception, so then they'll be encouraged to do it next time also. In this essay, in the Ol Yaakov, he talks about, is this a din in the mitzvah? Is it a din in the osa mitzvah? What exactly are we focusing on? He has various nafkamines. He has a very long essay about this. Another detail which maybe affects our practical halacha also is that we find that here you have to recite these psukim. And what if somebody didn't know the psukim? So we're told that they would have somebody who would help them out. And then they just made it across the board policy. Kadesh Shlo Levayesh. We don't want to embarrass anybody and put them on the spot. Do they know it or not? So they would have others prompting them. And we find this in various institutions nowadays. We find this under the chuppah. And then you have an across the board policy to prompt the chassan in harayat, whether or not he knows it on his own. Maybe the whole idea of the rabbi making the berachas erusin might be related to that. We really should have the chassan make it, but maybe the chassan doesn't know how to, and then we don't want to embarrass those who don't, so we make it across the board policy. And it's also how we get to the idea of having a professional balkore. Right, that it used to be that everyone who got an aliyah would go up and lane, but in order to not embarrass maybe the one or two people who may not be ready to lane the whole parsha anytime they get called up in aliyah, so we have a professional who's trained beforehand, and he's going to do the laning. So there are different policies because of that. There are those who say, let's say somebody gets an aliyah, and he happens to actually know the aliyah. It was his bar mitzvah parsha. So he says he'd like to lane when he's called up. So some rabbanim don't allow that, because they say that the whole point of the policy is that not just we're giving you an option to have the balkari lane for you, but that nobody lanes themselves anymore. That even though that was originally the job, but now that we have a professional, the whole point of that professional is that he does it for everybody and nobody has the option of laning. So it becomes a whole fight, of course. So it's also a discussion about how Shemaya Kaona impacts the concept of Bikurim when we're talking about this parsha. So could you listen to somebody else and just do it through Shemaya Kaona? Would that be effective? So it's a discussion because the parameters of Shemaya Kaona are subject to dispute, especially if it comes with some other kind of action. So it's a machlokas whether that is effective through Shemaya Kaona. It's a long discussion. Maybe we'll also find another opportunity for it. It's also a question about whether one could set aside Bikurim on Shabbos. So the Avnei Nezer is a tshuva about this. And Paris Yosef HaChadosh quotes this and has discussion about maybe it's an issue of Borer. Maybe by selecting out the Bikurim part, maybe that constitutes an act of borer. So what if you just thought it? You didn't say anything, but you just designated it mentally? So the Paras Yosef considers the question of whether it should be okay then, because the Gemara says, the Shabbos and Daf Kuf Yud Gimel, regarding the Davu Davar, the Gemara says, Dibor Asur, Hirhur Mutter. Yeah, you're not allowed to say certain things on Shabbos, but you can think them. Question is that really a relevant application here? Because there, the Gemara was talking not about a malacha. The Gemara was talking about the concept of Dabudavar, literally, is the issue of what's proper for Shabbos, what's Divrichol, and the like. So, regarding talking about weekday things, you're not supposed to talk about on Shabbos. So there, the Gemara says, you're not supposed to talk about them, but thinking about them is permitted. Hear her mutter. But when you're talking about a malacha, so if you could perform a malacha through hirhur, would you say that's mutter? So this is increasingly relevant. Right? This is also a point that technology is taking up, that it may be possible to make things happen through your brainwaves. So it's a very relevant question. Is that also going to affect malachas? So very possibly not. Very possibly there's a room to distinguish between a malacha and Davar Davar and the like, but okay, it's a much longer discussion. I guess it's probably tangential at this point, so we won't spend much more time on it. But okay, so the pasuk continues. V'lakacha kaina tena miyadacha v'nichol l'fnei mizbach Hashem l'kacha, as the kohen takes the basket And then the person's got to speak. So what does he say? V'anisa v'yamaret l'fnei Hashem l'kecha arami oved ovi v'yerid mitzrayim v'yogar shomim se'mat v'hisham v'goy gadol atzum v'rav. So my ancestor was a wandering Aramean. So where do we know this pasuk from? In addition to, sorry? Vagada, right? So here, there is a lot to say. It's fascinating that everyone comments on this, that Chazal chose the structure of the Haggadah, of all the Pesukim to quote. If you were to tell somebody, write your own Haggadah and quote Pesukim from the Chumash, so presumably everybody would be quoting from Vaera, Bo, Beshalach, they'd be quoting Pesukim about Yitzias Mitzrayim. And the fact that these Pesukim about Bikurim make up so much of the Haggadah, very fascinating. So there's a lot discussed about this. Rashid Kambi Abna has a whole essay about this. Apparently, this is to show us what we're doing Pesach night. We want to show that we are retelling, just like he was retelling in that context. We're doing what the Bala Bikurim is doing. And the idea of Haggadah, the word itself, Avigdor, translates it as a theme of Hodah. And it's very much, as we said, the consistent theme throughout this Aliyah, that Hakaras HaTov requires acknowledgement, and therefore requires identifying and retelling. So the idea of Haggadah is this aspect of Hodah, and we find it happening here. And we need to transport ourselves into the moment. The Rashiva would point out that this is why also the Smichas HaParshias, the end of last week's Parshah Kiseitse, is about remembering Amalek. And Amalek is kind of the opposite here, because Amalek was trying to desensitize us. Many understand Amalek is representative of cynicism, trying to pour cold water on all of our enthusiasm. And here we're saying you gotta do the opposite. You gotta wake yourself up, you gotta put yourself back into the moment and remember everything. And this is the opposite of a Amalek. So we go through all of Jewish history, as some point out, or Schlesinger points out, say for Al-Gvarim, to show that even though things are new in the rest of the world, that the history of the Jews is constant, and that we are retelling that, and that this is a very powerful experience that we want to evoke in our Pesach night, in our Haggadah experience. This phrase, Goy Gadol, so we find that, we know this from the Haggadah also, it says, Molamei Jehayim Mitzuyonim Sham, that the Jews were identifiable and noteworthy in Mitzrayim. And once again, so the Torah Tamima explains where you get that from. So it's interesting. So he says maybe it's from the word gadol, okay, gadlehu, you should make somebody big, they made themselves big. Or he says maybe it's from the word goy. So you know, it's ironic that sometimes the word goy is considered offensive. We refer to a non-Jew as a goy, people get upset sometimes. Obviously words take on different connotations, and it's about tone of voice and other issues that are also relevant. But as far as the literal translation, so goy is a very non-offensive word. Goy is actually the opposite. It's actually a more dignified word than otherwise. We know the Torah refers to Jewish people as a goy, but also literal translation is very possible, very possibly meant to convey something more. So the Torah Tamima has a commentary, says the difference between an Am and a Goy, that an Am is just a gathering of people, while a Goy is a gathering of distinguished people. So like I said, the word that we use to apply to the nations of the world is really certainly not literally pejorative, and may even be the opposite. You know, the English word Gentile also has that kind of connotation. It's a very innocent connotation referring to people in general. So here it's maybe more than just innocent, it's maybe actually positive connotation, and it's interesting that it's been taken sometimes other ways. But in terms of his understanding of the contrast between Goy and Am, so the grandfather comments in Mishnah Nefesh, he says, not 100% Bukharuch, because he brings Psukim from elsewhere for both points, where Goy is used a little bit more neutrally, and Am is used maybe a little bit more in an exalted way. But in any event, that's what Torah Tamima suggests, that maybe that's one of the ways in which the Baal Haggadah and the Chazal wrote that we were Mitzuyonim Sham, is because maybe the word Gadol tells you that, or maybe even just the word Goy tells you that. Okay, so let's skip around a little bit. Let's go to Pasuk Tes. V'yeinu l'makom hazeh v'yitin lanu es aretz hazos eretz zavas chalav v'dvash. So here, it's interesting to note that it seems like it's out of order. So we're talking about the Mikdash. So we say v'yeinu l'makom hazeh, and then v'yitin lanu es aretz. They give us Eretz Yisrael after we came to the Mikdash. So clearly, chronologically, it's the other way around. So Rav Shach suggested that this was meant to make the point that this is why we go into the Eretz, that we have a purpose, that we have a sense. So the order is meant to convey what the ultimate mission is. So we want to get to the Mikdash, so we go into the land in order to give us that context. And it's also, again, consistent with themes that we have seen. And then just to close off, I'm going to do a little end with this, but a very powerful obligation, which comes up elsewhere in the parsha as well. Maybe next year we'll have more of an opportunity to talk about that, but maybe also, maybe over the course of the next few days, we'll have opportunity to reflect back on this. Maybe actually we'll reflect back on this on Sunday a little bit. We talk about Rosh Hashanah, but the pasuk ends off telling us there is a imperative of simcha, of v'samachta, not just in the context of Yantif, we find v'samachta b'chagecha. But here we find beyond that, v'samachta b'chalatov, v'sher nasan l'chashem l'kecha l'v'esecha, ato v'halevi v'ager asher v'kirbacha. So there is a mandate, an obligation of simcha. And thematically, there's one unit here, because we see this is very much tied in with the idea of hakar satov, because if somebody gives you a gift, then you're miserable when you're receiving it. So that's itself a lack of hakar satov. Even if you write a thank you note, but you're still miserable, so the hakar satov should be reflected in the fact that you're happier for receiving it. So that itzu, this is a very thematically structured aliyah, starting off with the themes of hakar satov and ending with themes of simcha, that this is an obligation throughout. Again, maybe we should explore this topic a little bit more in the coming days, and we'll have an opportunity to do that. But also, especially because it comes up again in the rest of the parsha in a way that's a little bit scarier, a lot scarier, that we're told that all the bad things, chalila, could happen. Tachas esher lo avadatam es Hashem elokecha b'simcha b'tuv levav, that we're in trouble for not being Eved Hashem b'simcha. So that's really strong. Are we saying that we're in huge trouble if we don't have simcha specifically? Is that the nature of that comment? Some suggest it means that no, you were b'simcha and you're lo avoda, that you happily, like we saw also yesterday, rode fachar yisr, that you were enthusiastic about doing the wrong thing. But the pasuk of the pasuk is that the lack of simcha can get us in big trouble. So that's very much a theme of this aliyah, beginning and the end of the theme. And maybe also it, perhaps ironically, ties it into the rest of the parsha, like we started off saying that the parsha is the very varying themes with so much that's so negative and unpleasant, but starting off with this very cheerful aliyah. But we see perhaps there's room to say that they are direct inverses of each other, that having the mentality of simcha is crucial, and losing that mentality of simcha is one that could lead to chalila, a very bad result. So this whole idea of being able to celebrate appropriately is one that's, again, a consistent theme through a lot of what we're learning about this year, and also a lot of the parashiyos that we've seen, and perhaps also has a lot to teach us about our attitude towards Rosh Hashanah. And maybe, God willing, we'll be able to explore that a little bit on Sunday. All right, so we'll stop here. Wish everyone a wonderful Shabbos. What time Shir is going to be on Sunday, I'm going to have to let you know. There's a little bit